Not needed.
Hey, welcome to this episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is Cyrus Alderwood. And today, we got a really interesting topic we're going to talk about. Well, it's September 10th, so we're going to talk about 9/11. We got Rob Mahoney back with me. Thanks, Rob. Sweep the leg, Mahoney. How's it going, buddy?
Good. How are you doing, man?
Hey, doing good. Doing good. It's a somber, it's a very sobering topic, and we were chatting about this before the show, and you're going to do another YouTube on this a little later on, I think you said. So, just how the world has changed since September 11, 2001. Hey, but not to get off on a down note, I want to read this book, Rob. I'm going to hold this up. We're Skyping for those of you listening. This is called Stupid History. I am absolutely fascinated with this book. This particular entry is called The First Real American President. The first president to be born a citizen of the United States was number 8, Martin Van Buren. He was born on December 5th, 1782, 6 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Because all previous presidents had been born before the American Revolution, they were actually British subjects. So it was, you know, by our Constitution, illegal for them to actually have been president, but yet they were. How interesting is that? Martin Van Buren, the first American-born president.
Wow.
The stuff you never know.
It's crazy it took 7 presidents to realize that, hey, we need a real American here.
Hey, didn't we write that rule in that's kind of screwed that up? You know what else is really interesting? Like, I feel like sometimes public school ripped me off. I didn't get a good education. I mean, I guess decent, but some pretty important stuff they didn't teach. Like, we actually had 6 presidents before George Washington was president. And, like, I tell people that, they're like, oh, no way, that's bullshit. No, it's true. Go look it up. They weren't president of the United States because we didn't have the United States, but they were the president of the Continental Congress. So you had to have leadership people step in prior to that and leading up to fighting the Revolutionary War and then actually declaring our independence. And people don't know. I think that's some pretty important history. Those people ought to be in our history books, don't you think?
I do think so, because until you said something, I didn't know that.
I know, like, why the hell do we know? Were we never taught this, man? Like, that sounds like some pretty important stuff.
No, I remember that. I remember the Continental Congress, but and they never said, like, who were the leaders of those. So, wow.
Yeah, I've been being a real nerd lately, doing a lot of historical research, and I led up to a battle of Point Pleasant. Yeah, there's a battle called the Battle of Point Pleasant in West Virginia that took place 2 years before the Revolutionary War, and that was actually called the unofficial first battle of the Revolutionary War, because that's the first time British troops stepped over and fought on the side of the natives, firing on the colonists that the colonists were pushed to go expand anyway. So, yeah. Crazy stuff, and I thought Point Pleasant was just known for the crazy Mothman. What little do I know? It's like American Revolutionary history right there, alongside the Mothman. Hey, let's jump into this topic, Rob, because this is sobering. I forgot to turn my phone off in the background, so anybody hears it ringing or dinging, that's my dumb fault. Where were you at on 9/11 when the first plane hit the tower?
So I was actually sitting almost how I'm sitting right now, right in front of a computer in Mansfield, Massachusetts. Actually, that's where I live now, but I actually moved away at one point. But anyways, I was on the computer chatting with a friend of mine who was in the reserves, and I guess at that point the first plane had already hit, but I didn't. Well, I wasn't watching the TV. I had the TV on mute, so I'm just talking to my friend, and when the second plane was about to hit, the last thing I saw my friend said was, oh damn, I gotta go watch the TV now. And I'm like, what's the TV? I have the TV on. And I turned on, I was like, oh yeah, I have it on mute. And first they were showing the building that first got hit, and I just thought that was weird. And then they were just showing the replay of what had just happened, and I thought it was a replay of the first plane. I thought maybe like I missed the footage or something, and when I realized that was a second plane, I was like, there's just no words that I couldn't even put out on how I was feeling, because it was so surreal. And seeing that second plane hit, and then I think I just had my mouth open for like 5 minutes. What am I watching? Is this a movie? Is someone messing with me? That's the first thing I thought was, this has to be like a trailer for a movie or something. And then when I realized it was real, and that this is, you know, actual news topic, and this news station telling us everything that's going on, the first thing I felt was fright. I was afraid for the first time. I've never admitted I was afraid of anything, but I was afraid at that moment. Because I knew a second plane only meant one thing.
Terrorists. Yeah. I mean, the first one could have been a crazy accident, but you doubt it. The second one, that solidified it.
That was a nail right there. That was the nail saying that this has to be terrorism.
I was in Cincinnati, Ohio. I was living there. I was working for a brokerage firm, Fidelity, who's, you know, well, because they're out of Boston. Yeah. I was working there, and of course I worked a little later shift in the day, so I would come in around noon, and I remember getting up, because usually my routine, wake up, shake off the night from before, because everybody would go out after work, and then get ready for the day, go in the living room, turn on the TV, watch CNBC, see what's happening in the market before I go in, you know. And then that's when I saw it. When I got up, I saw the replay of the first plane going in. And then I was stunned. Like, probably millions of people like you. I sat there and I'm like, was that real? Did that just happen? And while the commentator was talking and had the camera, still on the on the tower, you saw that other plane coming in from behind. Like, you just caught it for like a half a second. And then it hit and then boom, this big explosion. And then, you know, it's just the world changed at that point. I was afraid too. I knew at that point, definitely terrorism. I suspected it after the first one, just because I don't know why, you know, planes flying into buildings in New York, the World Trade Center was actually a target by Bin Laden in the 90s when Bill Clinton was president. If you remember that, they tried to blow it up with a truck bomb and bring it down. And I thought, wow, they've, you know, these terrorists have done it. And I didn't know I was crying, Rob, but I was. But it was these hot tears. And like, I was half scared, and then half was honestly a rage. It's, you know, I'm glad I'm not in charge of anything, because if I'd have had a chance at, you know, getting a hold of that nuclear football, somebody would have paid dearly at that point.
I agree.
That was definitely some scary times. But I think the thing that you and I were kind of getting at is not just – everybody kind of remembers where they were at on 9/11. And anybody that's listening, feel free and comment on this, where you were at on 9/11 and what your experience was. Or leave a message for me and Rob. I'm cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com. You can find Rob on Rob Mahoney on Facebook, and just leave a message for us. Let us know what your experience was, and I'll read them on a show coming up. But the world is so different, because I was saying, like, on September 10th, after work, I went out with a few friends. A couple of them are completely liberal, you know. A couple were like so far right conservative. But people could get along back then. It didn't matter your politics, even though the people were very divisive, because we just came off that Bush-Gore election. And remember how contentious that was and drawn out.
Yep.
And I think we started to see a political divide right then, like really getting strong, far left, far right. But, you know, the day before that, we could all go out and laugh and talk about baseball, go to the baseball game together, throw some beers back, you know. And today you can't do that. It's almost like taboo to, if somebody disagrees with you in this world these days, they're demonized and vilified.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you say we can do it, but I think we choose not to, because we're afraid of that interaction as far as what you believe and what you don't believe, and everything's taboo now. And it was, like you said, it wasn't like that on 710 and before. But where, and we said about conspiracy theories, I'm not really going to go into that, but I'm going to say this, that after that, everything became whose fault it was. And then you had this part saying it's that fault and this part saying this fault. So it did become taboo to go out because you were afraid of that interaction of talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, I think what I was telling you before the show, for like 5 to 7 days after that, it seemed like it did unite us for a second because we all were affected. We all knew somebody or we all had somebody in the profession, like a first responder.
Uh-huh.
You know, the first responders that went into that building. So you kind of like, we all bonded together. You know, all these people died on the planes. All the people died in the towers. And it was like we were all Americans for 5 to 7 days.
And we all know somebody that went to war after, too. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll say this. I have a friend of mine at the time. He was special operations, I suppose. And me and a friend were invited kind of last minute in Cincinnati to this location. And I guess it's 20 years later, so I guess I can talk about it. I guess his commander had kind of called the band back together. They'd been called up. They were special ops. And this was before Afghanistan, the bombing, and we hit Afghanistan. And they were, I guess, we got invited to this, where this group, like husbands were going, their wives were there, and if you had a couple of friends, you might could invite them in. And it was like a little farewell, because first thing in the morning, every one of them were gone. They didn't know where they were going until they got on the plane. They didn't know when they were coming back, but they knew it was in regards to our response to 9/11. And it turns out, my friend who had invited me and, you know, another friend of ours, we were like the three amigos, and he just got divorced at the time. So his gorgeous ex-wife wasn't showing up. So we went to this party, and it was very touching to see these guys hugging their kids and their wives, because they didn't know they're coming back. Or if they were coming back. And as it turned out, my friend, I guess he, in a night jump in Afghanistan, I guess they were, he ended up hurting his leg and was, and they ended up sending him back home. But he was one of the first people on the ground getting intelligence. And the first casualty in America, on the American side, was a soldier. I think it was from West Virginia, but he was standing right beside my friend. When that guy's chest was opened up in fire from gunfire. And, you know, he said at that point, I asked him how he felt. You know, I was like, you don't think about feeling. Your reaction is, it's all muscle memory. You got your job to do to make sure nobody else gets killed. And, you know, you engage the enemy, you know. And then, you know, you help your comrade out the best you can. But it was just one of these things. It's like, how close that hit to home for everybody. And for a while there, we were all one people. And I wish we could find that spirit today, Rob, because, you know, you and I haven't talked about this at all. But if you watch the news for 20, 30 minutes, it's so infuriating because there are, even on Twitter, I see videos going around, this, these riots. And, you know, protesting normally is one thing, but we're not getting much of that. We're getting people, businesses burned down, pulled out of their cars, and have the hell kicked out of them for being there, just for being there. I mean, what... You know, what the hell kind of world are we living in when, you know, people get attacked for one political view or another? I mean, it's okay to disagree.
It is.
It used to never be that way. I mean, I saw a 7-year-old kid got attacked by two women because he had one of that red Trump hat on, and they got arrested for hate crime yesterday for assaulting a 7-year-old. I'm like, who the hell does? I mean, and I'm not trying to point one side over the other because there's plenty of hypocrisy and bullshit to go around.
Well, here's the thing is, like we talked about before the show, before 9/11, you know, we saw each other, but when that happened, when the tragedy happened, it seemed like we all got together, and I was saying to myself, why does it have to take a major tragedy for us all to get along and bond as one? Why? Why is it always in tragedy that we do that, but not in everyday life? And like you said, now where it's like everybody's divided now. And that all started, that whole mentality started after 9/11. And it just got progressively worse over the years, and especially the last 5 years. I don't even recognize the world we live in today. I don't.
Yeah, you say 5 years. I say the last 10 years have been culturally just almost painful.
Yeah.
And
so much separation in the world. We used to think as one nation, and now we think all separately now. And like you touched on earlier, we're afraid to talk about certain things now. That was never an issue before 9/11. That was never an issue. And now it's like you're afraid to say this because you might offend this person. You're afraid to say that because it might offend someone else. It's like, what are you allowed to talk about now? It's without offending somebody. I just wish we could go back to that mentality that, yeah, we can agree to disagree, but that doesn't mean if we disagree, we're an asshole or anything.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like if you disagree on a lot of things, I mean, either you're a bigot, you're a Nazi, you're a fascist, you're a socialist, a commie, a racist. What it's like, we divide and conquer is a strategy in war, and I think politicians and mainstream media know that all too well. And, you know, the old story, the old adage, if it bleeds, it leads. And that's what the media shows. If it's tragic, you know, it could be a very rare event, but they would show it to create turmoil.
Yeah.
Because that's what the media does. I've gotten to the point, Rob, where I have a hard time even watching the news. To me, like all news, and I don't care what news your source is, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, or Fox, to me, it is all propaganda for one side or another.
It's for one thing.
Yeah.
It's for ratings.
Yeah. I mean, and I think
controversy creates ratings.
People, I think, in general are waking up to this, but they don't have a venue or a platform in which to discuss it. Because when people try to discuss it on certain types of social media platforms, I see people getting banned or shadow banned or their pages deleted or whatever. That goes to some people on the extremes. But I've seen a lot of people that are in the middle of the road that are trying to have a discussion. And of course, you know, for every one person trying to have a discussion, like I look at our culture sort of this way, Rob, and if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But you have about 80% of the people in the middle, and you know, they can all get along, but they don't because they have too much noise distracting them and convincing them not to do it. Then you have the 10 on the fringe on the left and the 10% fringe on the right. And one person can try to make a good, solid argument or try to bring about change of a real discussion without arguing or violence. And the 10% on either side are the ones who fill up 90% of the chat board. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are the other 80% feel like they're left out because the loudest voices in the room are on the fringes. And I read a really interesting thing that on Twitter, Twitter is like the Wild West for free speech, but a lot of people are getting banned on there too. But I don't believe in banning. I don't think anybody should have their accounts banned for free speech. Say whatever you want. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole. Yeah. Everybody will know it. I don't believe in censorship, period. But, you know, Twitter, I read somewhere that like 80% of the tweets that go out on a daily basis are done by something like 7 to 10% of the people, users.
Yeah.
So what does that say about those loudest voices in the room? And that noise does not speak for the majority at all.
Not at all. But, you know, the people I feel, I mean, going back to 9/11 for a second, the people I feel bad for the most is those first responders. And I think we've kind of done them an injustice because those first responders were doing something that none of us could probably even have the courage to do.
Oh, I wouldn't have the balls to run back toward that. No way.
Walk into a building that they know is collapsing. And especially those guys that went all the way to the top. Those guys knew we're not going home tonight.
Yeah, they knew they weren't coming down.
But they were, and I'm getting a little emotional here, but those guys went all the way to the top to try to at least save someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we did after with their memories is we did this to them. we separated our lives for everybody. And I think it's a real injustice for those guys that did that, the police officers, the firefighters that had more balls than anyone I've ever known to go into that building. And what do? We desecrate their memory. But because we want to argue about this and we want to argue about that, and I want to ban you for this, and I want to, you're not my friend anymore.
And those who have residual health issues from it, their health care should not have been a question, period. If they rushed into that on a terrorist attack on our nation, your health care should be covered for life. I look at it this way. We have politicians who have been in office 20, 30, 40 years, who have done more damage to this country than an enemy could with stupidity and being unqualified for what they're even trying to do. And yet they're catered for life. Their retirement's taken care of. Their health care is constantly taken care of. Do you know that after a congressman retires or is defeated in an election, that they get paid every year anyway the same amount? Or actually, it's a lesser amount, but I think the minimum they get paid is like $120,000 a year because they served in Congress.
Wow.
And tell me, but yet we can't pay for a firefighter's health care after 9/11 or after an event like that.
It's tragedy because you hear all the stories that came out of that. You watch some of those documentaries that had the people that got one last phone call from someone on a plane. And I think even the families should be set up for life for having to go through that, for getting a phone call from their loved one on the plane that was headed to the White House saying that, "Mom, I'm probably going to die." And that mother had to hear that and know that they just lost their kid. And we don't take care of them.
I mean, at the very least, their mortgage is covered. Their mortgage is paid off. Yes, something. Exactly.
So give them something for their heartache. Don't just send them a letter, "Oh, we're so sorry for your loss." You know, that. And speaking of that last plane, talk about courage.
Yeah, the one that went down to Pennsylvania.
Guys,
yeah,
those guys knew they were going to die, and they tried to take down the terrorists.
To make sure that plane did not go into the White House or into the Capitol building. I mean, they saved a bunch
all those families should have got some kind of like a Congressional Medal of Honor for the heroic efforts of those people to take down the plane. Knowing, hey, if we take down the plane, we're probably going to die, but we're going to die anyway, so let's go out fighting.
Yeah, let's roll.
Let's roll. Thank you. I was just going to say, what was the quote that they said? Let's roll.
Yeah, that was the last thing they heard somebody say on the phone. Let's roll. And they took care of business. I mean, and to think that, I mean, I get so aggravated at politicians that have been there, especially those that were there then and still there now. Those guys and everybody on that plane risked their life to save their asses.
Yep.
And, you know, they can't honor them more than that. And that's very sad. And I really wish, our world would kind of come back to that feeling, you know.
And any... rewind.
You know, it's people need to understand, Rob, that not everybody agrees politically on things. I know I have disagreements with people politically. I don't get very vocal about my politics sometimes, but because in this day and age, if you someone will punch you in the face for that stuff. But yeah, it's people need to understand that there's respect yourself enough to respect others, and I don't know where we lost that at in this culture. And it's okay to disagree. It's free. It's just, it's okay. You don't have to agree on everything. And then, like, even on social media, which is so childish, I'm going to unfriend somebody. Well, hell, you weren't friends with them to begin with, probably, right? It's just somebody you had on your list. But it's, you know, it just kills me that, people can't have civilized discussions on serious issues. Like, I mean, even something as simple as like tax cuts. Well, if you're into tax cuts, you must support Republicans, and you're a bigot and a racist. It's like, whoa, why? Because I earned my money, I want to keep it. Let's back off of the, and let's. And I really hate like the left and the right of the world's worst doing this.
I hate labeling. I hate labeling.
Yeah, you don't label somebody until you've talked to them. You know, I mean, you can't. And the fact that, like, everybody, like, wants to compare the other side to Hitler. Let's back off of that shit, because until somebody opens up a public oven with bad intent, let's not compare anybody to Hitler, because that's just, that's asinine.
And actually, that's a disrespect to the people that did live through that.
Yes.
That's a total disrespect.
And let's stop censoring each other. You know, that's another thing that kills me in this culture. The cancel culture. Yep. Are we not allowed to make mistakes in our lives? Are you and I going to pay 10 years from now dearly for something we might have said when we were 25, when times were different, culture was different, comedy was different, we laughed at a joke that now people says, oh, that's not funny. Are we gonna pay a price 10 years from now for youthful indiscretion? You know.
Well, I'm gonna kind of paraphrase something that a favorite rapper of mine says. Tom McDonald. He says in a song, "How are we so offended when we all grew up watching South Park?"
No kidding.
South Park is the most offensive show that's ever really come down the pipe.
And I love it.
What did we do? And we laughed at it.
We did. It was funny as hell.
I mean, and that show insulted everyone. That was an equal opportunity insulting show.
So, yeah.
How are we offended by anything now? That should have desensitized us right there.
Yeah. And I think something that's – this is just my personal opinion, and you can disagree if you want. That's fine. But when it comes to all the things going on with these statues today – that you see Antifa and BLM just throwing, and they defaced some that were, like, why did they deface that? Like, did they not realize that they were for the same cause? You know, like, just kind of, I think people are ignorant of history a lot.
Yeah.
But we miss a great opportunity, whether it's Confederate statues or statues of Northern generals. It does not matter. We're missing a great point to take school kids out on a tour, on a bus, to see these in person and actually have a teaching moment of who that person was, what they did, what was wrong, what was right. Because, I mean, it's a civil war, for God's sake. We can't run from that history. It's there. You can't hide half of it away because it's always going to be there.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, because what we're going to be teaching the future generation is that everything was all peaches and cream, because they're trying to erase that history. The best history you can teach somebody is not just the goods, but the bads, and how we can learn from those bads.
And there's a lot of history that we weren't taught in school. A lot of things that were done to the Native Americans. Hell, if anybody should be pissed, it should be them. But
I totally agree on that one.
And you know, but
I've been saying that forever.
And
anybody has a gripe, it's the Native Americans.
You know, but. And I'm okay with, and I don't have any kids to send to school, so I mean, who am I to say one way or the other? But, I would have been okay with myself or for my nieces and nephews, who I love dearly, and kids today that, you know, even young kids, I know friends have them. If they go to school and they learn the truth, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it, that is necessary, and I'm okay with that, even if it wasn't the history I was taught. As long as we can learn and learn from that history. Because, you know, one of the most influential books out there, I think, is George Orwell's 1984. And you recall in that, but I'm sure you've probably read that and seen the movie too, probably. You've probably seen about every movie. But it strikes me that every little bit they write off something, they cancel culture, something in history, and put it down the memory hole and then tell people it didn't exist.
Yep.
And that's what we're doing on that far left side, and the far right side is being so abrasive and aggressive about it and angry in a way. I mean, it's, if we could phrase it in such a way that we had a discussion, I think that could be helpful for the country, but it's not. And those who try to make it a discussion, and I know people who personally tried to make it a discussion with a local monument here, that's kind of up in arms. But it seems like there are those who don't want that to be a rational discussion. And, you know, when you bring it up in a rational, reasonable way for a discussion, then you're vilified too.
Yep.
And we've got to get away from that culture.
People are afraid of history sometimes. I think that's what it is, you know, with all the 9/11s and then the school shootings, and they don't want their kids to actually learn the truth. They want the kids to grow up and a carefree environment. And I hate to, you know, we've never really had a carefree environment, but we always had togetherness. And that's what got us through. But since 9/11, that togetherness has fallen apart. And that's why cancel culture is so prominent now, is because there's no togetherness. So there's this, the left side, the right side, who's right, who's wrong. And instead of talking it out and discussing it, like you said, we're getting labeled for our opinions. And I just wish it would go back to 2010 and see if we could stop the events of what happened, because maybe this could be a much better world.
Yeah, I miss the 90s, Rob. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, me too.
I really miss the 90s. But, you know, that aside, though, it's just but we can have a better world. I think all of us can have a better world. But it starts with each and every one of us and how we treat people tomorrow. And we all need to look in the mirror, every single one of us, and make that effort. Like, there's some things I don't agree with, you know, especially, but, you know, if I could sit down and talk to people and find out why they feel that the way they do, we've put a man on the moon. We can't find a common ground to find a reason to give each other a hug, you know?
Thank you. Great point.
So, but, you know, tomorrow can be a better day. And I pray it will be.
That's all we can hope for.
Yeah. I know, Rob, this is kind of way off our beaten path. Some of the stuff we've talked about, from 80s heavy metal to horror films to you know, anything else under the sun. But it's a sobering topic. I'm glad you come on to talk with me about it, because I was going to do a podcast. It kind of is a tough topic to be flying solo on, because I did a – the 15-minute podcast or 10-minute podcast for a nonprofit I do that I have, and talking about 9/11, because it's kind of off the beaten path with what that podcast was. But just reminding each other to, you know, to be kind to one another and remember how we all got along. And it's important, but I got a little emotional on that one. I tried not to, but you can probably hear it in my voice.
Well, I mean, 9/11 is probably still the most emotional driven thing that any of us can still talk about.
It was
like you said, for our listeners, please put your memory. Let us know what you were doing that day, because sometimes keeping it inside is actually the worst thing. Let people know, let people in. And I think that's how you start to get that togetherness again, is that we can all relate to that day.
That was our Pearl Harbor for our generation. It really was. I remember calling my sister, and I had just hot tears streaming down my cheeks. And I called my sister Tammy, and then after that I called my other sister Melinda, and we were just tore up, just really tore up, all of us, because I just wanted to make sure everybody was okay. And I know everybody in my little small town, I'm so far removed where I live from any of this stuff that's going on in the world today. And I'm honestly lucky and blessed I live in a place like this. But you know what? Whether you're listening in a city or a small town, find your closest friend that doesn't have COVID tomorrow and give that son of a bitch a hug. That's because we all need it. Go find your neighbor that's got a political sign up in the yard that doesn't jive with yours, and just go over there and say, "Hey, I'm just saying hello today. Hope you have a great day." And things like that, you know, just a little kindness goes a long way. That ripple effect is a powerful thing, my friend.
And then ask them to pay it forward.
Pay it forward. Pay it for definitely so. Hey, Rob, thanks again for coming on, buddy. I appreciate you taking the time tonight.
No problem, man. Anytime.
We'll do one again, maybe Urban Legends. I'm dying to do some shows on Urban Legends.
We'll talk about one.
All right, buddy. You take it easy, man. Thanks again.
Not right now.
See ya.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me? Can you see me now?
Did I lose you there?
Yeah, I think we've lost Rob here. But thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Very much appreciated. Check us out. Check me out online, The Gonzo Chronicles on Facebook. I'm Cyrus Alderwood. I'm on Facebook also and on Twitter. Let me know your thoughts about 9/11, what's going on in the culture and so forth. And drop me an email, cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com. In the meantime, take care, everybody. Love each other. Give somebody a hug. Pay it forward. Talk to you down the road.